All right, and we are back. It is another fantastic Monday on the Locked On College Football Podcast. I am Jordan Reed. He is Jonah Tulls, and we have an action-packed show for you guys today. Just to give you an overview of some things that we are going to discuss, of course, we'll start off with Tua Tagovailoa and his unfortunate injury this week against Mississippi State. Then we'll, of course, hand out our annual Pride sticker Mondays on this glorious day that we like to call our favorite day of the week to highlight some of the best players from around the country. And then we'll finish up with some game recaps from around the country. So, Jonah, how's everything going with you today, man?
Man, here's the thing, Jordan. I used to think Mondays were the worst day of the week. And then we introduced Pride stickers. And now Monday's my favorite day of the week. So I cannot wait to get into this discussion here. It's the chemistry and the kind of the effect of the Locked On College Football Podcast. It's why you should leave a 5-star review, in fact. this Pride sticker segment is my favorite day of the week. It makes your Monday so much better. It makes my Monday better. So I'm ready to get right into it, man.
It's just because we get to glorify some of the best performances from around the country. And there were plenty of worthy guys. And I'm going to go ahead and kick this thing off just because I usually kick it to you. But at the coin toss, I'm actually going to receive on this day. So
where was this coin toss? I had no proof of this coin toss. This is like the Geno Smith heads, tails, going all over again. You kidding me?
I'll receive right here in this phantom coin toss, which I should say. So it never actually happened, but I'm just going to go ahead and take it and receive the ball. But anyway, the first performance I am going to start off with, and of course we always highlight three from around the country, and I'm sure we'll have some very similar guys, but my first guy on the list is Justin Herbert. The way he played against Arizona, I was really excited to see that just because you get these streaky games from Justin Herbert where sometimes they open up the offense for him and they let him stretch the ball or push the ball down the field, I should say. He ended up being 20 of 28, 333 yards, 4 touchdowns, and only 1 interception. I thought he made some questionable throws in this game, but outside of that, there was about 3 or 4 plays where he looked like the top-flight quarterback prospect that we were accustomed to seeing, that we wanted to see all of this year. And I keep saying that however you felt about Justin Herbert coming into the year, you probably feel the exact same about him now, just because he hasn't had that big moment in games where he's come back from a huge deficit or he's just completely just thrown the ball all over the yard against a certain defense in the country. But this was one of those moments where we were waiting to see exactly how it could transpire in a big moment. And even though Arizona isn't a huge opponent, but of course it was a nationally televised game. And I put out a tweet saying that some of these late night Pac-12 games are gems, man. And some people on the East Coast, like myself, I should say, sometimes they go to sleep. And of course I'm working the late night shift for the Draft Network, so I'm staying up, I'm watching all these Pac-12 games, and you see some really good prospects, and I know a lot of people really are asleep at those times, but Justin Herbert put on a fantastic show.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even just the stats, because there are other players who put up better numbers than Herbert did this week, but just in terms of, like, the throws he made, he was making plays that we haven't seen him make all season, and the big plays he needed to make on the big stage, and Arizona's not really his primetime team, but it was, you know, in front of national television, not a lot of people get to watch Pac-12 play. He made the throws he needed to make. And, you know, we'll get into Tua's injury here in this episode. But, I mean, I said before this whole podcast, man, there are going to be teams that have Justin Herbert QB1. And you saw glimpses of why, you know, against Arizona. He is able to, you know, throw elite ball placement. His ability to throw at different arm angles, kind of like, I'm not comparing to Patrick Mahomes, but it's that same kind of deal where, while he's on the run, in the pocket, off balance, whatever it may be, his velocity on his throws doesn't change. And it's like he can still throw at the same, you know, rate with his arm talent at all levels of the field. And that's with his size and his overall physical profile, I guarantee you a lot of teams will have him as the QB1 on their draft board come next April.
And I'm kind of upset at myself just because I completely went off the rails there. We were supposed to discuss and open up with Tua Tagovailoa's injury, but we'll get into that in the second segment. But I threw you for a loop there, and Justin Herbert definitely is somebody that I wanted to highlight on this show very early just because I thought he looked like a top-flight type of quarterback prospect in this game, and I was really happy to see that. So I flip it over to you now, and who is your player or prize sticker that you're going to hand out first?
Man, I got to tell you, and you talk about Pac-12 after dark kind of guys, because you worked a late shift for the Draft Network for game days, and I know you've seen this guy a lot, Michael Pittman Jr., USC, yeah. Baby, and this guy's a a Senior Bowl invite. This guy accepted it, I think, a couple of weeks ago. 6'4", 220, that prototypical big kind of player. Reminds me a lot of J.J. Arcega-Whiteside coming out of Stanford last year. And boy, oh boy, he's put up production over the last couple of weeks. You want to talk about the last three games, excluding Oregon, you got Colorado, Arizona State, and Cal. In each of those games, he put up at least seven catches for 146 yards and a touchdown in each of those games. With two of those games with 11 catches and 13 catches and 180 yards against Cal this past week. This guy has really, I think, proven me wrong from an evaluation standpoint. He's why I first studied his tape in the summer. I thought he was the guy that, you know, if he ran under 4.6, it'd be a win for him. I thought he was kind of a one-dimensional receiver at the next for next-level purposes. But, man, he's really proving himself as a route runner and a guy who's really, you know, savvy in terms of stacking corners vertically, where he doesn't need to win vertically with speed. He can win it in other ways. And I think you can do that with a savvy. And that's how a lot of these big receivers in the NFL have lasted for so long. And it's almost like how Cortland Sutton is able to succeed in Denver. You saw a lot of him this past Sunday.
Yeah.
Vikings fan. And Pittman Jr. has that same kind of feel to him as that big-bodied receiver. And I think his hype is going to only grow as we get into draft season because of how good his tape is. Because he's not just this one-dimensional big receiver who just thrives at the catch point. He is really nuanced in other areas of the game, like getting off with his release and stacking corners over the top. So I'm a big fan of Michael Pittman Jr. He gets my pride sticker for this week.
And I actually wrote an article about him. I believe it was last week. It was posted last Saturday, just highlighting his exact story and what he has done so far this year and just how he is as a player. And I went back and watched him against Utah, where he had over, I believe it was like 12 catches for 200 and something yards and two touchdowns in that game. So it was really an incredible performance. It was 10 catches for 232 yards and a touchdown, I believe it was. That's by far one of his better games of the year. And what you notice is that he's not a super twitchy type of guy, but he just understands how to get open. He's very advanced with his releases, has very strong hands, and I just love his NFL pedigree, being the son of an NFL player. That kind of stuff really means a lot to me, just because he knows the exact expectations going into what it's going to take to succeed as a professional player. So I'm excited to see him down in Mobile, and I'm definitely going to have a red star beside his name, just because I think he definitely is a name that could rise, as you mentioned. So getting into you want to add something to
before,
that?
Okay. Are you getting to your next pride sticker, or are we going straight to Tua?
Let's do Tua in the second segment.
Okay. Okay. So name your next pride sticker, because I have another one that I think is really good as well.
So my second pride sticker is going to go to Chase Claypool, the wide receiver from Notre Dame.
He had a monster game.
Seven catches, 117 yards, and four touchdowns against Navy. By far the best game of his career. And he's been a bit of a streaky type of player throughout his career, but he hasn't had a day like this where we're saying, okay, this guy's finally ready to break out and be that main option for Notre Dame on the perimeter, just because they don't have a huge bunch of, I would say, explosive options on the perimeter. But I think with Claypool, there's been a lot of debate as far as should he transition to more of a Y flex tight end type of role, just because if you see his body, he's very strong looking. He has that chisel body, and he looks truly like a traditional tight end, but he plays receiver, and he's not an overly twitchy guy, very similar to Michael Pittman as far as in the speed department and how he wins, as far as boxing guys out at the catch point. Not an overly great route runner, but he's just good enough in order to get open. So with Claypool, I thought he had a really good day, and I thought he showed some of the dominating traits that a lot of people are excited about him. And he's another person that a lot of people are going to really have a close eye on in Mobile. At the Senior Bowl, he's already accepted his invitation, just because he hasn't been able to really show the repertoire of what he's capable of. And I'm excited to see him down in Mobile.
I'm going to ask you a question. I wonder if, more so a statement, I wonder if, you know, more guys like Chase Claypool are going to be more open to switching to tight end in the future because of how these big wide receivers are transitioning to tight end. Like for example, look at guys like Evan Engram or like guys like Hunter Bryant, for example. These guys are getting drafted in the first, second round, whereas, you know, bigger receivers like, you know, Pittman Jr., and if Claypool tries to enter draft as a wide receiver, Alan Lazard, these kind of guys, they're starting to get drafted a little lower if they play a wide receiver as opposed to they switch to tight end. And I think Claypool is that kind of that, you know, in-between area to where I think he can be that kind of like Evan Engram role player for a team, you know, as a true Y. He won't be a great blocker because he hasn't been asked to do that, but neither did guys like Mark Andrews coming out of Oklahoma or Evan Engram coming out of Ole Miss. So it's like I wonder if more guys would be more receptive to playing tight end now that the position is kind of molded into like a big slot receiver. So I'm interested to get your thoughts on that.
I think he can do it just because I think that's what his game really is centered around, just because he's not going to beat a lot of people vertically, but he has the body that is able to sustain at the point of attack as far as if teams want to try him out as a blocker. But he could play that Evan Engram type of role to where he's just strictly a receiving threat. And I think he's very capable of doing that. And I think he's going to probably run in the high 4.5s or low 4.6s at the combine. I think that's probably going to be his best. But I think he could carve himself a really nice role as that flexible wide tight end that moves all over the field. And not only does he play in line, but he can flex outside on the perimeter and be that, I don't want to say elite option, but he could be that serviceable option as that wide move flex tight end. So that's something that he's probably going to be asked about, especially not only at the combine, but also at the Senior Bowl as well.
Yeah, I really hope to see him in those tight end one-on-ones in Mobile, because yes, I think that's where he's going to be best at in the NFL. And I'm not saying he can't play X in the NFL, because I think he can. But with how the NFL has moved to this move tight end and how tight ends are now considered big slot receivers, like the Evan Engrams, like the Mark Andrews, who are having wildly successful seasons this year, it makes me think that these wide receivers, they will soon understand, these big wide receivers like Chase Claypool, might understand that there's more money to be made if you play tight end now than just play big wide receiver. You're a one-dimensional X kind of player. So I think that's what Claypool is if he plays wide receiver. I think he's a one-dimensional guy who's a red zone threat that you bring him situationally. I don't think he's a guy you bring out on every single passing formation, but he's a guy that you bring out situationally. If he's a tight end, you play him in the big slot. He's a big mismatch machine, kind of like an Evan Engram. So I wonder if more players like him and more types like him move over to tight ends. I think that will be his best spot in the NFL.
He's definitely going to be a name that I'm going to have circled down at Mobile to check out, just to see how fluid he is and if he is asked to play in that tight end role down in Mobile. So keep an eye on Chase Claypool. But getting to your second prize sticker, who are you giving your prize sticker out to this week?
Man, I am – you know this is my guy. You know – Hamza Nasruldeen is one of my guys, and he put up nearly a school record breaking 22 tackles last week. I think he had to go all the way back to 1968 to find someone who had more tackles than him at Florida State history. So he followed that week against last Saturday with this Saturday putting up 11 more tackles and an 80-yard pick six. I don't know if you watched this 80-yard pick six, but he looked like someone who's like a, you know, runs like a 4.3, 4.4. This guy was outrunning everybody, making moves. He looked like Barry Sanders in the open field, juking everybody out. It wasn't like a gimme 80-yard pick six where he just ran a straight line. He made like eight people miss on this pick six. It really just showed how athletic he is and how explosive he is. I mean, he had a nice interception of the ball, the catch point. Ball skills are tremendous. We've talked about that before on this podcast. And he's that safety linebacker hybrid, not just like Isaiah Simmons. I think Isaiah Simmons is a little bigger. I think more suited to play inside linebacker at the next level, where naturally kind of leans more towards safety. But he's kind of that same kind of overhang chess piece player you'll play at the next level, where you can move him around and play him to the matchups. And, you know, with his size at 6'4", 220, he's going to be a matchup nightmare on defensively that you can put on, you know, those big tight ends. We talked about Chase Claypool. You put Nasruldeen on Chase Claypool, and you can all of a sudden neutralize that kind of matchup. So I'm a big fan of Nasruldeen. I think his stock's going to soar once in the pre-draft process, because not only because of his physical measurables, he's going to test out the roof of the combine if he declares, but his tape is starting to match what his traits show. And when the two combine like that, it makes for a really good draft prospect.
And with the day and age of just being in these hybrid safety roles, I think he definitely fits that type of role and what teams are going to want and ask out of him. And he's not just a come downhill and thump you type of safety. He can cover. We've seen that out of him, and I think that really is his calling card for the most part, just his cover skills for the most part. I think that's one area where he has improved the most over his time at Florida State. So definitely keep an eye on the name Nasruldeen. I'll leave it to you to say his name. I can never say his name.
On Hamza Nasruldeen.
Hamza Nasruldeen. There we go. Yes. That's one name I am always going to struggle with forever and ever throughout the draft process. For whatever reason, I cannot say his name.
I know I've made it when I can spell Hamza Nasruldeen perfectly without any mistakes. That's why I know I've made it in the draft industry.
That definitely is a tongue twister for me for whatever reason. So, Hamza Nasruddin. There we go. I got it after the millionth try. But before we move on, I want to remind our listeners about DoorDash. You can treat yourself to the meal you deserve and have your favorite restaurants come to you with DoorDash. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the promo code LOCKEDON. Listening on the go, you can visit DoorDash right now. You can find this and all other offers from Locked On sponsors at lockedonpodcast.com/offers. Again, that's using the promo code Locked On. That's LOCKEDON. Visit DoorDash right now. All right, moving on to our last prize sticker of the week. And this guy was a standout performer. He finally looked like the top 10 prospect that a lot of people are labeling him as. And that's AJ Epenesa, the defensive end from Iowa. 2.5 sacks and a forced fumble against Minnesota. And they constantly tried to double team him. But when he got in those single block situations, he completely took advantage of it. He was a terror in this game off of the edge. And it wasn't just off of the edge, I should say. But they slid him inside on some third downs. And when they like what I like to call some NASCAR packages on some third downs when they were trying to create some pressure on obvious passing down situations. And even though I don't want to say he only got 2.5 sacks, it easily could have been 3 or 4 just because he got home on some plays and he just didn't finish, or he was a split second away from getting the quarterback. So AJ Epenesa, even though it's been a bit of a down year for him and he got off to a slow start this year production-wise, some of the pressures that he got, he finally was able to get home in this game against Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, while watching that game, he was just unblockable. And I think you started to see, you know, I think you made a great comparison during the game, and that was DeForest Buckner, the kind of the vibes you get from watching Epenesa. And that's the same kind of player I see with him, his ability to win with power and a little bit of quickness. But this guy has just explosiveness everywhere in his game, and I love it. 2.5 sacks, like you said, doesn't quantify how disruptive he was. Had a forced fumble in the game as well. He was living in the backfield all day, and this is a big reason why Minnesota lost their first game of the season. Rest in peace to the national champion, Minnesota Golden Gophers, by the way. But Epenesa really, I think, rekindled that top draft prospect status he established in the summer. And I think, you know, when people look past the numbers, because his numbers have really lagged behind his, you know, spectacular 2018 campaign. But it's a lot like how DeMarcus Lawrence has been playing for the Cowboys. Like, a lot of people say DeMarcus Lawrence is playing bad for the Cowboys this season because his stats aren't matching up with what they did last year. His presence is just as much felt as it was last year. And that's the same thing with Epenesa. When people go back and watch the tape, I think people will start soon realize, hey, this guy was as disruptive as he was last year. I think we need to look past the numbers because the tape speaks for itself. So I think patience with Epenesa, and I think this game really proves why he was a top. He was pretty much talked about as a top talent all year long.
I'm excited to see how the NFL really values him. And I think he's going to end up being a high draft pick just because of the potential that he does show, even though his stats have kind of been down this year. And this is his first year actually being a starter. He's been in a limited role behind some guys. I know Anthony Nelson was one guy in previous seasons that he did play behind before. And he had never recorded over 35% of the snaps, I believe it was. I believe I read about that prior to this season. But now he's in his first year as a full-time starter. And he got off to a bit of a slow start, but now he's starting to get comfortable in that full-time starter role, and he's really starting to thrive. So with your last prize sticker, who are you handing out this week?
Man, I feel like Pride Sticker Monday needs to be named after this guy because he's been named in like every single one. It's Jonathan Taylor from Wisconsin. I mean,
absolutely.
Listen, and he had another 200-yard performance, putting his rushing total this year up to, check this out, 1,463 rushing yards and 17.
Not too bad. Not too bad.
Yeah, that is what I call good. And this wasn't your typical 200-yard performance for Jonathan Taylor. Check this out. In 3 career games against Nebraska, 3 career games, 671 rushing yards. You know what that means? His 204 rushing yards against Nebraska was his worst career performance against the team throughout 3 years for the Badgers. This means Taylor's worst game against Nebraska is another running back's career best game. So even though he put up 204 rushing yards, it's just amazing to me that is his worst game against a single team in his career.
That is crazy.
It really just shows how productive he's been throughout his career and just the talent he has at the running back position. again, I think he's for the majority of NFL teams, he'll be the number one running back on their board. And I think when you combine the athleticism, the all-around package that he's shown more as a receiver this year on tape, I think he's going to be the top running back drafted. And I think, you know, a team that needs an established identity, I mocked him to Miami in my latest mock draft because I think Miami's going to want to retool and find an identity for that new offense, draft the franchise quarterback, get a running back in there, kind of change the whole identity of their offense. Jonathan Taylor's going to be a first-round pick. It's just going to matter which team takes him.
Just imagine him, and I know they don't need a running back right now. Just imagine him in Baltimore.
Oh my!
In that offense,
why would you create that scenario? Because you know you can put Lamar Jackson and Jonathan Taylor in the same backfield. Come on,
that would be unreal. Mark Ingram's having a heck of a year, but just imagine adding the young piece of Jonathan Taylor in that backfield. That would be an incredible fit. But that is the prize stickers for the week. But before we move on, here's a quick word from our sponsors. After the segment, we will get into Tua Tagovailoa and his injury. And welcome back. We are back, and we are going to debate some unfortunate news. Tua Tagovailoa suffered a dislocated hip, as well as some other injuries as well. But the dislocated right hip is the one that has made headlines the most, and it's just an unfortunate situation just because you're talking about a guy that potentially could have been a top overall selection, and it is going to have huge implications on his draft stock if he does end up declaring. And yes, he can go back to school, but we'll see what Tua does end up doing. But I want to get your thoughts first on the injury, and then where do you think he could end up being slotted in the draft?
Yeah, I think the injury, we just have to play wait and see on this, just so we know the severity and the timetable. I don't want to jump to any conclusions. That's the biggest thing, is that I think people jump to conclusions too fast, say, oh, you know, the implications for his NFL career and his football career in general. I think it's, you know, I'm going to leave that to the doctors and wait to see the reports that come out of that. Because all we know right now is that he has a dislocated hip and that it was severe enough to keep him out for the rest of the season. Anything else is right now assumptions, and I'm going to wait for the news to come out on that. So that's first. In terms of his draft status, it just plays right into what I just said. But, man, it's really heartbreaking because, people will talk about tanking for Tua all year, and it just shows that, like, nothing is guaranteed in football or life, for that matter. I mean, Tua, you know, was considered the number one pick since, you know, for 2 years. And all of a sudden something like this happens, it could derail his entire NFL career. But it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. But again, it's just, to me, just wait and see. But it really is sad, you know, to see this kind of stuff. You never want to see something like this ever happen, especially someone like Tua, who's been, like I said, considered the number one overall pick for 2 years now.
It really is an unfortunate situation, man. And I'm still kind of upset about it, just because, not saying I can relate to it, but just being a former quarterback and knowing some of the things that possibly could be going through his head, and I'm just hoping that he took out an insurance policy like we see some of these top prospects do if he's not able to ever play the football or ever to play the game again, I should say. And everyone started to compare it to the Bo Jackson injury, and we all know how that ended for Bo Jackson, his career, unfortunately. But I'm really hoping for a speedy recovery for him. But I just think we just have to, like you said, just wait and see. And I just think the draft questions and exactly where he's going to be slotted is just, it's a bit premature right now. Let's just let him recover, make a full recovery, and then we'll worry about everything that comes after that. But we know what he brings to the table. But now there's just a huge, huge red flag with that, with the hip injury, just because we don't know exactly what the future holds with him. But I compare it to a Jalen Smith and Miles Jack type of situation. Right. I still think if he does end up declaring, I think he goes at the top of the second round at worst, just because comparing quarterbacks to linebackers, I think that's kind of naive. And we know that quarterbacks are going to be more in higher demand than what linebackers are. And with Tua, we know what he brings to the table. I keep saying that just because he's very talented, but we just don't know what he's going to be post-injury. Right. So I would be surprised if he goes later than the beginning of the second round. I think that's a fair range for him right now. But, of course, that's a bit premature. Do you have anything else to add to that?
Yeah, and I think people comparing the Bo Jackson injury to this is almost like apples to oranges because, you know, the medical technology that we have now is so much more advanced than we did, you know, 25, 30 years ago. So it's really comparing apples to oranges at that point, because even though we don't know the true severity and timetable to his injury, people saying his career ending right back like this were the same people who said Jalen Smith will never play football again. So it's one of those, and Jalen Smith's playing like a Pro Bowl linebacker today. He got a big extension from the Cowboys, and he's, you know, one of the cornerstones of that defense. So I think people need to stop with the premature assumptions here and saying, oh, this is a career-ending injury. And it might be one of those situations that drops Tua a round, or like you said, maybe the top of the second round, maybe more of his range, or late first. It'll certainly cost him a lot of money, but at the same time, let's not just assume this is Bo Jackson in career-defining injury. So I think this is one of those things that we need to wait and see on. But anyone assuming that this is immediately a career-ending injury just because Bo Jackson had the same injury, it's foolish.
I 110% agree with you. And it's just misguided thinking overall. And maybe this might be a blessing in disguise for Tua. So instead of going to a team that's really going to struggle to rebuild around him early on, maybe he can go to a contender that's in the back half of the first round, or even one that does slide back a couple picks and slides out of the first round and trades to the top of the second round in order to secure his services. But regardless, we know what he brings to the table, and we want to wish him a speedy recovery. But I want to move on to our game recaps. And this was a really entertaining week of games. And from Oklahoma Baylor to Georgia Auburn and Iowa Minnesota, which will be the three games that we debate, I thought all three of these games were really entertaining. And of course, I have to start out with Oklahoma and Baylor, just because I thought this game was over, man. I'm not going to lie to you. Just because the way Oklahoma played in that first half, going down 28-3, we know how historic that score can be with the whole 28-3 mantra going on with the Falcons and the Patriots Super Bowl, right, a couple years ago and all those jokes. It was pretty funny to watch on Twitter. But just staying on topic with this game, Jalen Hurts, he just showed so much poise in this game, man. And that's exactly what you see out of him from even going back to his days at Alabama and how he was able to come into the SEC championship game last year and just take over that game. Tua was coming off the ankle injury last year, and he just came in. He engineered them to victory in a sense, just because he led the game-winning drive there at the end, and they were down 14 points, I believe it was, and he engineered that comeback all the way back to win that game. So he showed that type of poise in this game. He had two fumbles in the first half that were clearly on him. He had one where he was running directly into the end zone, and the defensive tackle did a great job of stripping him on, like, the two-yard line, I believe it was, and they ended up recovering and taking it over right now, right there, and going back and scoring again. And I thought the game was going to be over after that, but Lincoln Riley did a great job of keeping his poise, even though Oklahoma's defense wasn't playing well, and they ended up winning the game 34-31. But Baylor just completely blew this game, man. They got so conservative, and they were kind of shell-shocked as far as what was happening in this game, and they couldn't believe that Oklahoma was coming back either. But Jalen Hurts continued to make throw after throw, but I thought he did a great job of utilizing his foot quickness and just his ability to scramble and make plays out of structure as well. I thought that's where he showed the most poise in this game.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to say this will be the most important game on Jalen Hurts' resume for scouts to go back and watch, because you talk about his poise and his ability to bring that team back from a 28-3 deficit. I mean, scouts are going to look at that game and be like, that's why he should be a first-round pick. Because you know as well as I do, like, young quarterbacks, when it rains, it pours. When you have fumbles, you have turnovers, you have interceptions, it just seems to be like this big old domino effect that keeps going and going, and you can't reverse that. You can't get that out of your mind. For Hurts to put that behind him and say, hey, I'm going to bring this team, I'm going to put this team on my back, I'm going to carry this offense back in this game, that's going to mean so much for scouts. And I think that poise and that kind of leadership, that'll play a long way for scouts. I think more so than people realize, NFL scouts value intangibles of the quarterback position more so than any other position in football. And because he showed those intangibles, that leadership, that poise to bring his team back, that will be the most important game on his resume, no matter what he does for the rest of the season.
And we saw it a little bit against Kansas State when they did lose that game, unfortunately. But we wanted to see how well he was going to handle adversity. We saw it at Alabama, how he was able to overcome a bunch of it. But we hadn't seen it yet at Oklahoma outside of that Kansas State game. And this was a staple game of that, just showing how he was able to battle back, stay tough, kept his hard hat on, and he battled back in this game, even though he didn't play well in the first half. And I thought he played lights out in the second half. So Jalen Hurts definitely is going to be an interesting evaluation, just because I think a lot of opinions are really mixed as far as his draft range and where he could go and where he stacks up in this quarterback class. So I want to spend a little bit of time on that, though. Where do you think he probably ends up going? If the draft was tomorrow, where do you predict Jalen Hurts would go?
I really think he goes in the first round. And I think the idea of like a mobile undersized quarterback has kind of faded. with the success of Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson, and these guys, Dak Prescott. All these leading MVP candidates are all guys who use their legs, right? And Kyler Murray's success as well. So I think that the notion of like, oh, a quarterback can't be too mobile because, you know, the durability comes into play, I think that has become an aged narrative. And I think Jalen Hurts, I think teams are going to start realizing and start playing to the narrative. Okay, the top MVP candidates in this year, the last year, are all guys that use their legs. And I think they're going to kind of use that as an emphasis going into this draft. And it seemed like Carolina, you know, with Cam Newton, you know, rumors of him being on the outs, Kyle Allen not looking too sharp in the last couple performances. It seemed like Carolina could draft Jalen Hurts, you know, in the first round. I could certainly see that, especially with how they've built their offense kind of around Cam Newton. But if their long-term outlook doesn't have Newton involved in that, a player, you know, could provide a similar kind of skill set, like Jalen Hurts. And then you got a team like Los Angeles Chargers trying to look for their replacement for Phillip Rivers. It could very well be a guy like Hurts. New Orleans, same kind of deal. All these teams with aging quarterbacks could look at him. So I think there's going to be a big quarterback run this first round with other guys like Jake Fromm, Jordan Love, Jacob Eason, Jalen Hurts. All these guys could end up seeing, especially with Tua's injury, they could see a tick up in the first round, and that will only drive the demand more as the supply even lessens. So it's going to be interesting to see where Hurts goes. But I really do believe if the draft were held tomorrow, and especially based off what he did on Saturday against Baylor, and so that poise and leadership and that adversity to come back from a deficit like that, I think he absolutely goes into the first round, if not, you know, top 15 or 16 picks.
And I'm glad that you mentioned Carolina, just because I love his fit there. And they have enough playmakers on the perimeter to help him. They have a very talented running back, of course, in Christian McCaffrey. And the way they really have centered that offense around the quarterback when Cam Newton is out there, as far as mixing up, as far as the quarterback running game, and then some play action passes off of it, and even some down the field shots as well to DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel and all those guys that they have outside on the perimeter, even in the slot as well, with Christian McCaffrey and the way they've incorporated him as a dual threat option as well. I really like Hurts' fit there with Norv Turner. I think Norv can really scheme up some things to help cater to his skill set and really center that offense around him. So Carolina definitely is an interesting fit. But before we move on to our last game recaps between Georgia and Auburn and Iowa and Minnesota, here's a quick word from our sponsors. All right, and we are back once again to finish up the podcast with Georgia and Auburn. And then, of course, we'll finish the final segment with Iowa and your national championship prediction, Minnesota Golden Gophers.
My dream is over.
It's officially dead.
My dream has become a nightmare, Jordan.
But just staying on topic with this Georgia and Auburn game, Georgia got the victory 21-14, and this is the victory that they needed, being in that fourth slot in the college football playoff rankings. I'm sure that's a spot that they will continue to hold down. They went up 21-0 in this game, but Auburn came storming back at the end, but they were able to hold them off at the end, and halted their comeback attempt at the end. Bo Nix was up and down in this game, but Jake Fromm, man, he continues to impress me in a sense, and he kind of wins in his own way. And what I mean by that is he doesn't have some of the upside or some of the arm strength that you see from a Jordan Love or Jacob Eason or Herbert or any of these other guys around the country. Even a Joe Burrow, in a sense, I don't think his arm strength is up to that par as well. Even though Joe Burrow's arm strength isn't the greatest, I think Fromm's is probably a tick under that as well. But he made a throw, I believe it was the first touchdown, where he threw it over the middle of the field in triple coverage. But he overshot all of the safeties and the corners that was associated with that throw. And he hit somebody on the post route that was just beautiful down the field. And that's some of the things that you get, or some of the qualities that you get with Jake Fromm. And I know he's not blessed with the most gifted arm in the world, but he's smart, he's tough, and I just love all the intangibles that he brings to the table. And he was my most impressive prospect in this game. And I don't want to say I fell in love with him or anything like that, but it wouldn't surprise me if he ends up being one of the better quarterbacks in this class, from this draft class, just because of how mature he is.
Right, and you know, and he played a great game against Auburn, and you're not going to get any disagreements from me there. The only thing I'll slightly disagree with you on is his overall outlook. I still think that his lack of baseline, you know, traits, the quarterback position, like arm talent, all these other, you know, traits you look for at the position are still below the other top guys even against mid-tier guys like Jacob Eason, the Jalen Hurts, Jordan Love, I think NFL teams will value his intangibles and kind of his pedigree as a winner at Georgia more so than I would. But I think that, you know, I would still, you know, pump the brakes on, you know, his outlook as one of the top quarterbacks in this draft. It's just because I still trust the traits in other guys more so than him. But there's no disagreements for me on this Auburn game. He played great, threw balls on a rope. But I just want to see that more, I guess, consistently, see those traits flash. Because he doesn't throw with the deep ball, touch his placement. He didn't do that against Florida, didn't do it against South Carolina. I really want to see him kind of own in on that more. But to me, I still think there are other guys better than him, that other guys that I would value more. Regarding the other prospects in this game, it was basically a game where, you know, when you look at top prospects going against, you know, big old competition, Georgia and Auburn, two good defenses, both good offenses. You want to see top guys just kind of check the boxes. DeAndre Swift, Andrew Thomas, Prince Tegu-Wanogo, these guys all checked the boxes and did what they were supposed to do. In the words of Dennis Green, they are who we thought they are. And this is one of those things where, you know, DeAndre Swift looked electric in the open field, making guys miss, has that elusiveness and juice that you don't see in other running back prospects. That's what makes him a top guy in this class. He showed that. Andrew Thomas and Prince Tegu-Wanogo, both guys, you know, looked, you know, complete, solid in pass sets, good run blocker. These guys are going to be top offensive tackle prospects for a reason. They showed that in this game as well. Derek Brown, same kind of thing. He looked explosive, didn't show anything that would make me be concerned about his draft stock. So all these guys just kind of check the boxes. And you can talk about Jake Fromm. He was the most impressive prospect, probably helped his stock the most in this game. But in regards to top prospects, they kind of just check the boxes.
Yeah, and there were so many prospects playing this game. And as you mentioned, the tackles, even Andrew Thomas and Prince Tegu-Wanogo, Jack Driscoll for Auburn is another guy that we both are a fan of as well. Even Isaiah Wilson, opposite of Andrew Thomas for Georgia. I thought all of those guys played really well in this game. And even though Andrew Thomas gave up one sack in this game where he just got completely blown off the ball and got beat with the inside counter move, I thought he played well outside of that. And they just continue to check all the boxes as well. And Georgia is loaded at wide receiver, man. There's some guys we're going to be talking about in 2021 that they do have, and they have a very talented freshman in Pickens, I believe that's his last name, right. That is very talented as well, and that we'll get into later on down the road. So Georgia, they're looking really strong right now. They're playing confident, and if it does end up being them and LSU in the SEC championship game, that is going to be an interesting matchup, just because I don't know if you saw it, but LSU gave up 402 rushing yards against Ole Miss, which is just incredible. I cannot believe that stat. I cannot believe that stat, especially considering a team that predominantly has a major defensive identity. But the run defense definitely has not been up to par this year. But I want to move on and get to our last game, just because I think this was a very entertaining game between Iowa and Minnesota. The Hawkeyes came out with the victory 23-19. They led the entire game, and I thought they were in control of the entire game. And Minnesota kind of woke up late in this game, but I love what I saw from a bunch of prospects in this game. Of course, A.J. Epenesa, we already talked about him, but Tristan Wirfs, I thought he was very consistent. He showed a lot of that athleticism and just that nasty mentality that comes and goes at times, but I thought he showed it a bunch in this game that a lot of people are saying that is going to make him the top tackle drafted. We'll see what does happen between him and Andrew Thomas on draft day. But Tyler Johnson, man, he was phenomenal in this game, and I thought he made some terrific catches in traffic, and he had a touchdown down the middle of the field that was really impressive as well. And he's a guy that I have compared to Davante Adams a lot, just because of how diverse he is from the outside. He can play from the perimeter, but he also can travel inside to the slot as well. And he showed that versatility in this game. But I think the best part of his game is just how consistent he is with his releases and how he's able to create separation. And those are definitely two things that I value at receiver, just because you're going to have to separate in the NFL, and you're going to have to exuberate, some type of catch consistency. And I know he has battled some drops in prior years, but I think he's been much better at the catch point as far as securing the ball and making moves with it after the catch point. So Tyler Johnson is definitely the one guy that did impress me the most in this game.
Yeah, and, you know, I wrote about Tyler Johnson for the Draft Network on Saturday, my feature piece, and this is a guy I call the first-round talent. And I think because, you know, let me ask you this. Are there any other receivers, maybe other than Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb, that these top guys, other than those top guys, is there another receiver in this class that checks all the boxes you look for at the wide receiver position than Tyler Johnson?
I would say no. And
exactly.
I mean, he's gonna be. I think he's gonna go in the same range as Davante Adams did, that early to mid second round selection. But I think somebody's gonna get an absolute steal with him. And I'm gonna go ahead and put this out there. I will be more confident with taking him in the second round than I would be any of those other guys in the first round, just because it's a huge risk with taking a receiver in the first round. And we haven't seen some really good results here in the past few years from those top flight first round receivers, but you're seeing guys in the second and third round having those immediate contributions. So I'm excited about Tyler Johnson. I'm a big fan of his.
Yeah, and two guys I kind of drew parallels to in the 2016 draft were Tyler Boyd and Michael Thomas. Both guys who play both on the perimeter and in the slot, and both are, you know, equally effective in either role. And that's the thing with Tyler Johnson. Both guys drafted in the second round, by the way, so I'm glad you mentioned that day two value with receivers in recent history. Both guys, Michael Thomas and Tyler Boyd, widely viewed as two of the top receivers in that draft class. But, yeah, I mean, Tyler Johnson, kind of the same sort of player, you know, really smooth, doesn't really have a, you know, major weakness to his game. I know people point to drops, but, you know, really when drops is a main concern, it's when it's a systemic kind of thing that's kind of the theme throughout his career. Man, he had multiple, you know, plays in this game against Iowa where contested tough catches. He hauled down every single one of them. So it's like, I don't really see that same issue other people see with drops. You know, maybe you'll have like a Amari Cooper situation where he'll drop one or two here and there. But I don't see the systemic problem with him. But getting back on track, Tyler Johnson, to me, checks every box you look for at the wide receiver position. He has the size, 6'2", 205. He has the speed to kind of beat guys vertically, stack them over the top. Talk about his release at the line of scrimmage. He has the most consistent release package of any wide receiver I've watched this season, maybe other than Jerry Jeudy. So, you know, that's going to translate. His route running against man coverage, ability to separate. You talk about it. You need to consistently separate the next level to be drafted high, the next level to succeed, for the most part, with how much man coverage is played in today's NFL. So you need that. And his ability to win at the catch point, he showed that against Iowa, showed it all season, had a really great game against Michigan State a couple weeks ago. And then, you know, run after the catchability, that's been documented as well. So look at all these traits. There's not many receivers in this class that check all the boxes. In fact, I make the case that he's one of two or three receivers in this entire class that checks every box I look for at the position. He may not be as fast as Jalen Reagor. He may not be as big or strong as Colin Johnson. He may not be as good after the catch as Laviska Shenault. But what he does, he's good in every trait those guys are not. And that, to me, will make him a better prospect on my board than those other guys.
I'm really hoping that it goes down to the Senior Bowl, man. And if he's able to go down there, I'm going to be super excited about him. And there probably won't be a player that I'm more excited to watch down at the Senior Bowl than him if he does end up accepting his invitation. I'm sure Jim Nagy definitely reached out to him and extended an invitation to him. It's just a matter of if he wants to accept it or not. So I'm really excited about him, and he's probably one of my early draft crushes so far this year. And we'll get into that way down the road once we get to that point in the year. But I'm really excited about him. This Iowa-Minnesota matchup, We saw so many really intriguing prospects, I should say. And Kamal Martin was another one that really stood out to me. And even though that defense, they kind of struggled in a sense early on, I thought he settled in really late. And I know you're a big fan of Kamal Martin. Just touch on him briefly.
Yeah, we have him on former podcast. I mean, this guy's a former quarterback, so you know he understands the diagnose and the attack kind of mentality, understands how, you know, offensive concepts, passing game concepts are, you know, drawn up. So he's never really out of position. So you love that. But on top of that, he's a really good athlete. This guy is one of the best space players in the country, especially in the Big Ten. Like, you know, he's been injured most of the year, so we haven't really had this national spotlight on him. But, man, when he goes to Mobile, a lot of people are going to be surprised with how well he moves. And I think when he goes to the one-on-ones against the Jared Pinckneys, the Bryson Hopkins, and hopefully the Chase Claypools, I think people are going to be really surprised at how well he sticks to those guys in the hip pocket, because he really is a great player in coverage. I think he might be one of the best space linebackers in this entire class. So that's really the trait that, you know, that highlights his game best. But I mean, he was able to stack. I love his ability to stack and shed in this game. So, you know, he's more of a Will linebacker, more so than a true Mike inside guy, but he really showed his ability to kind of stack, shed, and attack, you know, in between the tackles in this game against Iowa. And Minnesota got off to a sluggish start, you know, trying to stop that outside zone against their freshman running back. But they really settled in late in that game and kind of halted their momentum and kind of brought Minnesota back from the early deficit they dropped in the first half. And Kamal Martin was a big reason why. he's the guy, because of his injury, because he hadn't played this year, a lot of people don't know about him. He'll be one of those guys in January after the Senior Bowl, everyone will know his name.
Definitely. I'm excited about a bunch of these Golden Gopher prospects, and I know you predicted them to win the 2020 National Championship. I'm never going to let you live that down, by the way. But
hold on a second. I was not being serious with this.
I know you weren't. I'm never going to let you forget that, though.
Here's the thing. Let me go on a little monologue real quick. The Minnesota Golden Gophers let me down. Personally, PJ Fleck, you personally let me down. I was all in on the Minnesota Golden Gophers. How in the world do you beat Penn State like the way you did, elite performance against one of the elite teams in college football, and then you drop this dud to Iowa when you get one of your star players back? Tyler Johnson has 170 yards and a touchdown, and you lose to Iowa, who hasn't played well, in recent weeks. You're telling me that Minnesota loses this game? Oh, come on, dude. This one hurt. This one hurt me personally. And, I love the Minnesota prospects on this team. Antoine Winfield, Kamal Martin, Carter Coughlin, Tyler Johnson, Rashad Bateman, and so on. But PJ Fleck, you personally let me down. This is a game you should have won. It's a game that should have kept my national championship dreams alive. Shame on you, PJ Fleck.
Definitely. Your Golden Gophers definitely did let you down in a bad loss to the Iowa Hawkeyes, and they just did not look interested in this game in the first half at all. The defense could not get off the field on third down, but Iowa really dominated the game in the first half. But it really was a interesting game in the second half when they did march to the comeback, even though they fell short in the end. And the kicker, man, the kicker missed the field goal to make it a 3-point game. And that is, I just like, man, it's just not their day today.
Jordan, can I ask you something? Do we have like an opposite of a pride sticker? What's the opposite of a pride sticker?
I have no idea what the name of it would be. Well, a dud sticker, I guess.
The only thing I can think of is you take the logo off the helmet. You got to make them earn the logo back. I am taking the logo off of PJ Fleck's helmet. I am taking it off. Or if he's not wearing a helmet, he's wearing a hat. I'm taking that M for Minnesota off his hat. He has to earn it back.
They definitely have to earn it back. But that is our show for the day, I should say. Thank you guys for listening. We are the Locked On College Football Podcast. I am your host, Jordan Reed, alongside my fired up and disappointed co-host, Jonah Tulls. We'll be back tomorrow with plenty of other topics as well. Thank you guys for listening. As always, make sure to subscribe to the podcast and leave a 5-star review. We will see you guys tomorrow.